Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Monday, April 26th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Amelia Newcomb.
And I'm Ken Kaplan.
Cooking for many people includes a key ingredient, love. That was the case for Jesse Hamilton, a cook for a fraternity at Louisiana State University, and Jenny Wu, who owns Red Pearl Restaurant in Boulder Creek, California. And the heart they poured into their work was reflected back to them at critical moments this year. Miss Wu is a fixture in tiny Boulder Creek, slipping extra food into orders, feeding people in need, and taking free meals to regulars who are ill. So when 2020 hit hard, her restaurant closed twice, and a wildfire destroyed her house, the town rallied. It raised nearly $20,000, helped her find a new home, and provided furniture. When $1,000 was stolen after she reopened, customers restored it sixfold. At Phi Gamma Delta, Ms. Hamilton nourished students over 14 years with comfort food and a listening ear. She treated us like we were her own kids, says Andrew Fusayati, who talks about the powerful example she set. And when he checked in on her as the pandemic hit, he realized it was time to thank her more tangibly. This month, as she turned 74, he and others representing nearly 100 fraternity members surprised her with a celebration at her home and $51,675, more than enough to pay off the mortgage and, finally, retire from two jobs. "They were my kids. They still are," Ms. Hamilton said. "They used to tell me they loved me, and now they've proved it." Now, today's stories. Our first story. Those pushing for statehood for Washington, D.C. say it's undemocratic for D.C. residents to have no voting members in Congress. Those opposed say statehood would be unconstitutional and is part of a partisan power play.
The push for Washington, D.C. to become its own state is gathering new momentum. It won overwhelming approval from district voters in a 2016 referendum. And last week, the House of Representatives passed H.R. 51, which would give the district a representative with full voting rights and two senators. The bill has little chance of becoming law unless the Senate gets rid of the filibuster. Still, Democrats are seizing on D.C. statehood as part of a broader push to adjust the balance of power in American government. Although the framers designed the Senate to give each state equal influence, the growing correlation between partisanship and geography has meant that Republicans from rural, largely white states have gained outsized clout. Adding two senators from an urban Democratic stronghold like Washington, D.C., which has a far higher percentage of African Americans than any U.S. state, would help alleviate what Democrats see as the Senate's deeply undemocratic tilt. "I have every reason to press for full equality for the residents of my hometown," says Eleanor Holmes Norton, who introduced H.R. 51. She's represented the District of Columbia in Congress for 30 years, yet has never been allowed to vote on a single piece of legislation. The story was reported by Krista Case Bryant in Washington for The Monitor.
Family ties spurred many skilled workers abroad to rush home as the pandemic hit. Now their home countries are working to convince them it's worth it to stay.
As Italian newspapers have noted, where the tears of Italian mamas failed, the COVID-19 crisis has succeeded in bringing back home youngsters working and studying abroad. Nations across Europe that had seen an exodus of their best and brightest in the years before the pandemic have welcomed the return of young professionals. Remote working has allowed high-income Romanians to return. Poland, Latvia, and Bulgaria are also drawing back top talent. And if countries like Italy and Romania want to keep their returned people home, if simply as a way to help get out of the pandemic-spurred economic crisis, the challenge now is to figure out how. Several countries boosted tax incentives for returnees, But for many people, the decision to return came from a desire to care for family at home. As such, it's not clear they will stay long term. Trying to come up with a definite conclusion now is a bit too soon, says Nicola Nobile, lead economist at Oxford Economics, because we don't know literally what will happen next month. This story was reported by Dominique Sogel in Basel, Switzerland, and Kit Gillette in Bucharest, Romania, for The Monitor.
One small action may seem insignificant, but it can have a ripple effect in getting people to rethink things they take for granted. That's what residents are hoping for in Petaluma, California.
Communities around the globe are thinking through how best to reduce the environmental effects of fossil fuels, with great debate. In the small city of Petaluma, California, residents have united around one way to pursue that goal: to ban any new gas stations in town. It may not make much difference in the community's carbon footprint. My gut reaction to it was that maybe this is more symbolic than anything, says Kevin Fang, an assistant professor of geography, environment, and planning at Sonoma State University, who lives one town over from Petaluma. Are they doing other things, or are they not doing other things that would actually enable people to consume less gasoline? Still, supporters say the symbolism sends a message, promoting a shift in attitudes on climate action. Further changes to behaviors and policies may follow, including perhaps shifting toward new models of transportation. Local architect and climate activist Pete Gang says the ban helps residents understand how urgent the situation is and helps change the public perception of what's happening. This story was reported by Erica Page in Petaluma, California, for The Monitor.
Ending a day of Ramadan fasting with a very loud bang might seem counterintuitive. But amid lockdowns and limits on gathering in Jordan, the revival of an old tradition is prompting celebration and a sense of community.
During Ramadan in ordinary years, mosques are at their fullest. Neighbors and friends pray shoulder to shoulder each night, and the entire society is on the exact same schedule to the very second, eating, praying, and celebrating in lockstep. But this year, after a March in which Jordan saw some of the worst coronavirus numbers in the world, the government imposed a series of restrictions for Ramadan, closing mosques and imposing curfews just before the sunset iftar meal that breaks the day-long fast. With a holy month usually packed with rotating iftar invitations and late-night visits, the prospect of yet another Ramadan in isolation was especially severe, which is what lit the fuse for the return, after a decades-long absence, of the Ramadan canon, a booming tradition that heralded the precise moment of sunset and allowed residents of entire cities or spread across the countryside to break the fast in unison. The canon is a reminder that there is still a Ramadan spirit, a Ramadan flavor in the air, says Nasser Al-Rahamneh, an Amman municipal spokesman. Adds Umayyad, a mother of five, "These canons are taking me back to my childhood. Now this is the sound of Ramadan." The story is reported by Taylor Luck in Amman, Jordan, for The Monitor.
Gia Johnson has seen firsthand the hardship of incarceration on those behind bars and those back home. She's also seen how theological education nurtures humanity at both ends of the spectrum.
Gia Johnson calls herself an abolitionist. As director of the Solidarity Building Initiative at McCormick Theological Seminary, she helps bring a liberative higher education program to those incarcerated at an Illinois county jail. One student earned a certificate in theological studies. Another student, she explains, reflected on how he saw the kingdom of God break into his daily life at the jail, creating empathy that showed up as helping a cellmate who was ill. But liberative education is not about creating model inmates, Ms. Johnson says. It has two goals, she explains: providing resources for intellectual and spiritual growth to men and women on the inside, and disrupting the unjust economic, social, and political barriers on the outside that have resulted in our country locking up more of its citizens than any other country in the world. For that second goal, she and her staff have created a free online curriculum to mobilize communities of advocacy for those who are imprisoned. I like to think that we are grabbing hold of the baton and the struggle for survival and liberation that our Black, brown, and white abolitionist ancestors have been passing along, she says. We are finding our place on the time-honored Underground Railroad. The story was reported by Maisie Sparks for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on upcoming elections in Germany. Germany is in an era of firsts. For the first time since 1949, an incumbent chancellor will not be up for re-election this September. For the first time since the Greens Party was founded more than four decades ago, it is ahead in the polls. On April 19th, the party settled on its first candidate to run for German chancellor, Annalena Baerbock. Yet another first may matter more to Germans as they struggle with the pandemic and a desire to solve climate change. In a society whose politics already favor consensus building, the Greens set out in 2018 to show that a party once known for sharp disputes can set an even higher model for patiently bridging disagreements. It selected Ms. Baerbock and a more senior party leader, Obad Habeck, to work together as party co-leaders. This ruling duumvirate generally worked. The Greens moved to the center on many issues. If we don't do politics clearly differently, we will be stuck in the last century, says Ms. Baerbock. The party that might be first across the finish line in the next election may have already set a new first for Germany. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. And thanks for joining us as you start your week. Tomorrow, be sure to look for Ryan Lenora Brown's report on an art exhibition in Nairobi that features empty display cases. The show underscores the cost to countries whose art was taken during the colonial era. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how turning to God helped her engage with the news and avoid being overwhelmed by negativity. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Nick Roll.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.